Accession number 17628, Mr. Joseph Clark, Reel 5.
Mr. Clark, Reel 5. How did the civilians receive you and treat you during the time you were there?
We got on very well at Shipston. They were very good to us. We used to play, sometimes the officers used to organise a football match with the village people. I remember we went down to a place called Cherrington. And after the match, we went along to the church hall, and the women of the connected with the church hall had made a tea and what have you, you know, which was pretty good at that time. They were pretty good. Didn't have any problem. There was three or four of us. We met a man, called him Dick Dunsby. And he had a sister who was, she'd be a good age, I would think. Anyway, he took us all along one night, and we had a good feed at the home, in Mill Street it was. And I think he was connected with a butcher and trade somehow. But we used to go along regular after that and get a meal, and they called her Gladys Dunsby. And she was a great woman. A great woman. And I remember even when I went abroad, I used to write to her, and she used to say, let us know where you go. And I used to write back to her, Gladys Dunsby. She was like a mother to us. We were just young lads, 21. And she was very good, that woman. But that was the only one I can remember of in Shipston.
Did you get the opportunity to be invited for a bath? Because basically you're washing in cold water.
I just remembered, There used to be a workhouse on the outskirts of Shipston, where, you know, what there were in those days. Vagrants used to go in there and stay for a night or two nights, but they had to do some work in the grounds. And they used to march us up there to the showers. But with being such a lot of, you know, you had to be detailed off, more or less. But I just remembered there, we used to go up to the workhouse. I wonder if it's still there.
Did any men make attachments with any of the young ladies of the area?
Not in this particular place. There wasn't a lot there, really. It wasn't a big village, you know. There was an old, there was where they used to sell the cattle market place, and every so often they used to bring the cattle in for sale. I can remember that. No, there's not none that I knew of, unless they were doing it on the quiet.
And you did mention the fact that you had sporting activities mm-hmm. which involved civilians.
Mm-hmm.
Was sport still very much a big thing with you?
Still, mostly football. Mostly football.
Did you play against companies, battalions? Or?
Oh, yes. But this particular time we played these local lads. I think they were all off the farm. They were farmers, I should imagine. But that was in a place called Cherrington, just a few miles from Shipston. I remember being there one time. We hadn't been there long, and we'd more or less getting, the company even was beginning to get together. The sergeant said to me, Greener, I had to report to this Lieutenant Pettinger. And I had to report to Lieutenant Pettinger at the Bell Hotel. And I wondered what the devil it was for. Anyway, when I went up, he had a talk and he asked us to be his batman. And of course I told him I knew nothing about. I've been working in the pit, you know. But he did, he insisted you'll be my batman. Well, you know a batman's duties. Of course in wartime it's not like in peacetime. You more or less just had to see that he was turned out all right, just the same as yourself. He had the job of cleaning his boots and things, of course. More or less just seen to the general things that we used to have, only he had somebody doing it for him. Plus you didn't get off any of your own duties. And I was batman to him.
Can we look at it? You mentioned some of the duties of a batman there. It's basically a servant type duty, isn't it?
It is, really. Yes.
Did you resent that kind of thing?
No. Because it if it had been more or less... how shall we put it? I wasn't trained to do anything other than... I mean, I'd worked in the pits... But the things he told me how to do, well, you could cope with that. He would leave his he would leave his washing, say, like, just the same as us. All you had to do was see it was sent off to the wash. They went with the lads, same ones.
Was this an army laundry or a civilian laundry that did it?
I don't know how they did it. I think they engaged civilian laundries. Wash places.
Did you have to wake him on a morning with a cup of tea?
Well, no, not in the hotel. That has already been done. There were servants in the hotel. No.
And you were still in the butcher's shop yourself?
Yeah, oh, yes.
And you'd have to go along there?
I had to walk up to the hotel, eh? There was... There'll be at least 7 or 8 officers in there, and so they each had a batman, and you were all together. You used to meet up there, and you were all doing the same thing. But we did it there. They had an outhouse, and we used to do the cleaning boots and things up there. Sometimes you used to take the time of doing our own at the same time. He was a good officer.
Did you eat the same food as they were? Were you eating at the hotel?
No. We still had to line up and go to the cook. We were just the same. This was extra, really. Oh, no.
Did he ever give you any payment for work you were doing?
I believe, yes. I believe an officer claimed so much for the batman on his... payment. I can't remember exactly how much it was. I think it was about 0.5 crown a week. Or was it? It wouldn't be a month. I would think it could have been a week. But he had to pay that. And I'm sure they claimed that, or it was authorised from him being an officer.
And he passed some of that to you, did he, for the work you were doing?
Oh, yes, he used to pay you. Oh, yes. I mean, it was nothing then, but still, it was something.
Did the officers have a mess in the village?
Not in this particular place. They used the hotel, you see.
So you didn't have to do any kind of mess duties?
No. Otherwise, I wouldn't have taken the job.
In the manoeuvring situation, or in the platoon situation, what was the batman's role then with the officer?
Well, he was still just an infantryman, but there was the officer, the sergeant. They would be at platoon headquarters, and you would be with them. And sometimes he could use you as a runner. If he had a message and he wanted to pass it on quickly to a section or what have you, he could give you a message and you'd have to take it, regardless, and bring the answer back. Sometimes they did train you eventually, they didn't give you a written message, so that when you did go into action, you weren't carrying information. They'll just give you a verbal message and take it and bring it on back. Sometimes it went a bit haywire.
I was going to say that under an action situation, you could easily...
It went wrong. It often went wrong. You could, in fact, they did train you at times, get a group of lads together, maybe say half a dozen. And the officer would take one away and give him a message. Now, there's only the officer knew it and that man. And he would have to take it to each one, the next one, give him the message. And believe me, by the time it got back to the officer from the last man, it was nothing like it. Nothing like it at all. It was an entirely different message coming back. And that was what they were training you with, by a verbal message. You did get written messages, mind, but... that is, if it wasn't serious. But that was often done. They did train us, mind. That was done in the church hall. Taking the hall and sending it to different parts. And by the time the officer got that message back, it was nothing like it at all. That was interesting.
The relationship between you and the officer then, was it man to servant, or was it a little more close than that?
Oh, no. No. He didn't treat you as a servant, no. When you went on parade, he would inspect you just the same as anyone else. I remember once, outside of the butcher's shop, we used to come parade outside the butcher's shop. He had already been up and fixed his equipment for him, you know, so it was fitting properly and what have you. And I went down, and then I had to start with the rest of the lads, get my gear on. And when he was inspecting the platoon, he pulled me up. Something wasn't fitting properly, but I often wonder if he did it just so that the other lads knew there's no favouritism. I often wonder. I never knew. But he did. He pulled me up, and I just fixed him up. I remained friends with that man all the time. Even when I left him, I left him after Dunkirk, because I was transferred to HQ. I got a Christmas card from that officer right until 2 years ago. Every Christmas, I used to send one back to Newcastle, because I knew I'd met him. Once or twice, you know, in the Goldsmiths, Northern Goldsmiths. He was a head lad there.
Did he refer to you by a Christian name? Or?
Sometimes. Probably not in the face of the others. Yeah, he did. And if many a time, if the sergeant wanted to know something, you know, and he couldn't get in touch with the officer, he would get me. Go and see if you can see the Mr. Pettinger. Yeah. Well, I used to do that. You're more or less a go-between, which came in handy for the sergeant. But you were still doing your training the same as anyone else. You did your guard duty the same as anyone else. Nothing changed, even though I was a batman at that time. I don't think they could afford it anyway. You need it. I mean, there were so many had to be in a company, so many had to be in a platoon, and you couldn't be understaffed.
You mentioned that in an action situation, you were there with the officer along with the sergeant. So, was your role then more looking after him still? In a
just the same.
Protection role.
Just the same. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Had the company, in your case, the battalion, lost any men during this course of time? Were men being taken back into Civvy Street because they were skilled
not
men?
Not that I know of. I know there was, at that time, they were taking men back to the mines. But I'd been a miner, but I never got back. And my friend, in a lad called Arthur Templey, he never got back. And we were together all the time. He and I were good mates and all. But we lived in the same village at home.
So you never got that opportunity. Were the men in the amongst you who were still over age, First World War veterans, were they still around?
The cook was an old First World War. You see, they were territorials that we joined. We were militiamen. And there was some of those territorials who were getting much older than us. I mean, all the militia lads at that time were 21 was it. But some of them, in fact, some of them had worked and they were friends. But you could have the sergeant, one of his platoon could have been one of his best mates for all I knew about it. Which they were. They'd worked together and they'd been in the territories together, and then when the war broke out, of course, things had to change. But they were all good lads. I never knew any of them go back, mind, not from our company.
You've mentioned that you did sport and as part of your training and your leisure, really. What other leisure was there in the area? Did you have cinemas or public houses to go to?
Plenty of public houses, always was. But I was never the one. I used to go in. I was never the one for. Still not. But.
Was there a problem with drunkenness among the men?
Now and again. Yeah. You always knew who was likely to go off the rails, though. I kind of think of a cinema in that place. Of course, the army used to provide these at various places, you know, pictures. That happened more or less away from home.
Do you recall it, particularly any person, any member of your own unit who was amongst those that you had to watch?
Well, you got to know who was likely to get drunk, but you had nothing to do with them. There were some good lads, though. I think then, you know, I mean, the war was beginning to build up then. Your comradeship was more or less, it was something that you couldn't have had other than being in the forces, I think.
You got pretty close to each other.
Well, your life was going to depend on each other, weren't they?
And you felt that everyone was like that?
You used to pull together.
Mm. No one in your memory that wasn't the type that you could do that with?
No.
Was it the same with officers as well? Did you have the same?
Well, before? Some officers were good, some were bad. Now, the officer that was in charge of the arranging the sport and have you, I never knew much about him, but they called him Lieutenant Henderson at this particular time. I never knew what happened to him. He did go to France. Never knew. But he was a good one. He was one of the boys. I think that's why they made him a sports officer.
They would be easy officers to relate to and to follow. Yeah. And then you had those that you say that were not quite the same. And
no, well, as they got higher up, you know. Captain Wood was a good officer. He would stop and talk, you know, or even if you had to go for some reason or other to his office and you had to go in, well, of course, you had the orderly room sergeant. And the sergeant major was with him. He was the First World War sergeant major.
What did they call him?
Armstrong. Kid Armstrong. I only remember because I remember now he had the ribbons up. He was all right. But he was an old soldier.
Was he the Company Sergeant Major.
Company Sergeant Major. Each company had a Company Sergeant Major. There was A, B, C, D, all them was companies, and then HQ.
As a First World War Sergeant Major, he wouldn't see the war out with you, did he, this Sergeant Major Armstrong?
He was still there when I was wounded. He'd been to France and Dunkirk, and he was in the... Yes. Yes, he was still there. I don't know what happened after that, mind. See, he could have been a young soldier in the First War.
Were you receiving mail down in the village? And
oh, we got plenty of mail. Yes.
Came regularly?
Oh, yes.
How important is mail to a soldier?
Well, it's a lot. If you saw lads getting mail and you weren't getting any, you thought you'd more or less been left to one side. Especially when we got out in the desert, mind. It wasn't so bad at home in the villages.
Was it censored?
Always.
And who did that?
Your letters was handed in to the company office, and when any officer would say, there only had to be an officer though, they censored them.
We were told by the authorities what you could write, and
yeah,
what you must leave out.
You were told, yes, you were. You hadn't to mention where you were and all this. You mustn't disclose in a letter where you were billeted, where you were stationed, and what you were doing.
Were there any ways of getting that information through to your families or loved ones without showing you
plans? Once you left an area, later on, you know, say a month or so later, you could tell them you'd been somewhere. But you weren't there then, so you weren't giving information away.
You did speak about the fact you didn't have a great deal of money.
No.
Was gambling going on amongst some of the men?
Well, some of the lads used to play cards just to pass the time away, but it was pennies.
Was gambling frowned upon by the authorities?
Yes. I think the only thing that was allowed, to my knowledge, is what they call now bingo. And I think they called it then tombola. I'm nearly sure. But I think they would allow that.
Do you recall any visits from high-ranking people?
Yes, I do. There was, whilst we were in Shipston Stour, this was in January, and the snows on the bottom was very cold. We were told we were going to be inspected by a high-ranking officer. And this particular morning, we were lined up, and the RASC transport came. We all had to get on board the transport trucks. We didn't have to take our rifle, but we had to have sidearms. And, of course, I say it was cold. You had your top coat on. You just had your belt and bayonet round, you know. And they took us. We didn't know what was happening. They took us to a place called Chipping Norton. And we went into the square, big square. And there was the 6th, 8th and 9th battalions there, whole brigade. And the only instruction we got was, if he spoke to you, you still had to refer to him as sir. Well, we didn't know who was coming. We didn't know, because when we all lined up in threes, in fact, I'm nearly sure one of the lads, he collapsed because we'd been standing that long in the cold. We must have stood half an hour or more. And the colonel was like, in each company command at each company, you know, was it the... And in come this cavalcade of cars. And believe it or not, it was King George VI. And that was in Chipping Norton. And he was dressed as a field marshal, I would guess. I was surprised. I thought he was a taller man than he was. But he, with his company, whatever they were, one or two bald-headed men. And he walked along, of course, the colonel was introduced to him. As I guess, we were just rookie soldiers still. And he walked along the front row only, to my knowledge. And then he moved on to the next battalion, which was like in a square. And it wasn't long before the cavalcade was off again. And we were left there standing freezing. We were glad to get back home. But that was when we were inspected by King George the VI. And that would be January 1940.
Did he get close to you personally?
No. Why, no? I think I was in the middle row. No, he just walked along the front row. But that was the one time. You see, I think what they used to do in those days, I learned this later on, before a unit or a regiment moved abroad, someone of high authority came and visited them. Must have been something to do with a tradition or what, I don't know. But that was King George the VI. And he inspected the, or he visited the 151 Brigade. And that was in Chipping Norton. And it wasn't long before after that we were on our way.
How bad was the winter?
It was pretty poor then. It wasn't too good at all. Because what makes me say that is, I remember when we were moving off, when we were leaving Shipston on Stour, we were all lined up. We told we were going to move somewhere else. We didn't know where it was. And again, in come the transport, which was RASC, troop carriers. And they took us to the station at Morton in the Marsh, which was a few miles away. And we were put on the train there. This was when we were leaving Shipston. We were put on the train and we finished up at Southampton. And when we marched up there, there was a lot of snow. That's how I remember Morton in the Marsh.
Before we come to you actually leaving the country, had you had any leave?
Yes. I think I had 10 days. I think you used to get them in 10 days then. And it was at Christmas time, so it was the Christmas 1939. And we did get home. I'm not sure how long it was. It would be 5 or 10 days. I'm not sure.
Your family must have been really looking forward to your coming.
Yeah. Yeah, came to Durham Station.
Had you any notion at that time that it would be a an embarkation leave?
No. No. We knew it was going to come sometime. I mean, we'd only been in the army 5 months. We were in France within 6 months.
Did you feel at the time that you were going to move to France that you were well trained?
Well, we were as well trained as you could be. We were prepared.
Were you, if it's the right word, looking forward to meeting the Germans?
No. You knew it was going to come about. I mean, that was why you were there.
Was it a strong anti-German feeling?
I think so. I think so.
But you were reasonably confident that when it came
about... Well, you
about
were prepared for it, yes.